Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
And so our claim to fame around community building, it's like, all right, what proof do you have, is that we had our top customer buy from us 46 times, and we generated 7 figures from repeat buyers. We had over 3,300 people join our membership program, right, to be on subscription. And so the things that we did there was so interesting because when you're thinking about growth, again, I like threes. There are three ways you could grow a business. Like, these are like old school kind of foundational principles from back in the day. It is acquire more or convert more customers, get them to spend more each time they buy, or get them to come back and buy more frequently, right? And so when we're thinking about growing, instead of just trying to find all the black men, because we're in a very limited audience, right? Our total addressable audience was America, men, just black men with beards. It's like 5-6% of the audience. So it's like, all right, it's not like we could grow this business by continuing to find more people. A better way is to, when we get them, figure out how we can get them to spend more with us each time. Figure out how we could add value and additional products so that when they do buy from us, they spend more. So it goes from getting 10,000 customers a month, every single month, spending $25 to getting still maybe 10,000 customers, but you're getting them to spend $80 or $60,000 or $60 each time. So you could generate more money that way.
The biggest risk that most entrepreneurs take is trying to build a successful business without funding. But that risk is a reality for 1 out of every 3 entrepreneurs because their personal credit isn't where it needs to be in order for them to access that capital. Now, the truth is you can close the gap between where your business is versus where you want it to be by leveraging business credit. But if your personal credit report is poor, 99% of banks and lenders are going to deny you from doing so. And I should know, because a couple of years ago, I leveraged my personal credit report to get funding from Chase to start my company. And now that very same company, Take All Financial, is serving entrepreneurs just like you that are looking to restore their credit to get access to 5 to 6 figures in funding. So if you want to go from risk to reward, click the link above or below this video to schedule your free consultation so that we can restore your credit and put you in position to access capital to build the business of your dreams.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today is a very special day because our guest today is the former owner and founder of Fresh Heritage and the current CEO and co-founder of Codner Co. Through his experience of working in mergers and acquisitions along with the financial sales services space, he's been able to start, scale, and sell a 7-figure e-commerce brand within 4 years of it being created. He's also responsible for raising well over $50 million for capital used to invest in businesses, and he's created a platform where he's now teaching others how they can do the same. I've searched near and I've searched far. I've searched high and I've searched low. And when it comes to learning how to scale e-commerce businesses the right way, after this interview, there won't be anywhere else for you to go. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Miami, Fort Lauderdale area by way of the beautiful island of Jamaica, I'm here with the one, the only, my guy, Mr. Gamal Codner. What's going on, family? How are you?
My brother, I need to pay you to get that little clip so I could take it with me everywhere I go. That was amazing, man. Appreciate
it. Let me tell you something. You do a lot of interviews. You do a lot of podcasts. You sit down with a lot of people. From this moment moving forward, the next time you sit down with somebody, they don't introduce you like that. You get up, you leave.
That's
you ask
it.
Him to redo it. That's it.
That's it.
Listen, I'm excited to have you on, man. What's going on? How are you?
Good, man. Just came back from a strategic planner retreat in Joshua Tree. So my mind is clear, my spirit's aligned, and all is well on this side. Came back with God's favor.
I love it. Listen, I know you're getting ready to drop ridiculous amounts of just value for the people here today, but that's for them. If you do anything for me before you leave, I need the beard care routine. You see what's going on here. I'm struggling. We trying to figure this thing out, but you got it down pat. Like, whatever it is, you got to swing that my way, brother.
I got you. That's the easiest part. I spent the last 4 years of my life helping black men all across America grow bigger and better beards. So I can do that with my eyes closed.
That's my one selfish request. We'll get to that a little bit later, but of course, we're on here to provide value to the individuals. I'm extremely excited to have you on here. I've been watching you from afar for some time now, and I'm just all about helping entrepreneurs in whatever field of business that they're in just get to that next level. And I've had people on from real estate and logistics and consulting, but for what you do and what you specialize in, I haven't been able to touch on that yet, and I'm happy that I'm able to do that today. So very excited to get this value to the people, but before we do that, I want to make sure we get to those who are unfamiliar, familiar. I did it okay introducing you, but nobody knows Gamal Codner better than Gamal Codner himself. So who exactly is Gamal Codner?
It's a great question, man. I have a screenshot on my desktop and phone here about exactly who I am. It says, I'm a man of God, a husband, a dad, an entrepreneur, investor, a stylish fly Jamaican.
Come on now.
And a dope teacher who was sent here to inspire and to give people the tools they need to create wealth for their families from this generation and more to come. And so I was born in Jamaica, very humble beginnings. My family, you guys are from the Caribbean too, right?
Yeah, of course. I'm Haitian.
Yep. So you already understand it. And for every immigrant, whether it's from the Caribbean or Europe or wherever you're from, you understand it, right? Our families make tons of sacrifices to come to America to put us forward, and we cannot disappoint. And so, you know, very humble beginnings. One, we stayed in a 3-bedroom house. Sounds good until you realize that our family occupied only one bedroom in that 3-bedroom home. But it was all love. We didn't know what we didn't have because we were filled with love and we were provided for. And so it just kind of came up through schooling. And I moved to Atlanta after graduation to move with the one person I knew up there, a successful guy. He became my cousin, but you know, like Caribbean cousins, not really your cousins, it's someone you grew up with.
Right.
But he was in sales in Atlanta, and he just kind of like took me under his wing and just talked me about life, talked to me about wealth building, talked to me about saving, living below my means, and just acquiring a high income skill set, which is sales and relationship building. And then went into finances and fundraising, and then went into digital marketing. But that brought me through a lot of things. I did private equity and raised money to buy a company, had a couple of big L's, left me $250,000 in debt, worked through all of that stuff into finally operating a direct-to-consumer brand where we built and scaled and sold that in 4 years. And when we went to sell it, because of all the experiences of life, the PE, the money raising, the marketing, we had over 200 people interested in buying our business. So we had a lot of options and were able to close in under 30 days, which is unheard of. So I was just very fortunate. And we've taken a lot of that experience, both my wife and I, to start a coaching program now to help six-figure businesses build seven-figure businesses that they can grow and sell.
Perfect. Beautifully said, man. Beautifully said. You just said a lot, and I want to take time to really unpack all of it. And I think the best place for us to start this conversation, let's go back to 2016.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's 2016. You're in the beautiful country of Morocco. You're out there with your brothers, Jamil. And if I'm pronouncing his name right, Siandre.
Perfect.
You go out there just to take some more time to learn more about your heritage as an African man. But not only do you leave with that, you also leave with a brand new business idea. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I have this notepad on it right now. It was Evernote. Now it's an Apple Notes of just 7 and 8-figure ideas. Got about 10 of them in there. And so when an idea comes to me, God's talking to me, I'm hopping out the shower, whatever, I just jot it down and just put it there just so I could add to it. And I just remember one time going to Target, and I started growing out my beard. This beard represents 10 years of entrepreneurship. I've been growing this for 10 years. I was in the financial services industry and I could not have any facial hair at the time. And so I prayed about what I needed to do. Got fired from my job in that same month. So you got to be careful about what you pray for. God answers prayers in mysterious ways. I've lived it. And so I started growing my beard out. And so one of the things though is like my beard was really jacked up, full of patches and stuff. I could find a picture to show you early beard. And so I started using female products because women at the time there's a lot of innovation in there, like Shea Moisture and different people were creating really high quality products, but for women. So I did some research, and a lot of the products for men were either for like Caucasian men, like general products, but a lot of those ingredients in those products actually dried our hair out because we have different types of beard texture. And so the things that we had were the legacy products that had a bunch of bad crap in it from for you, or female products. So I chose that. And one day in Target, I was picking up a lot of pink glittery bottles, and I ran into my gym buddy, and he looked at my cart and he was like, "Bro, what you doing?" Almost like I was like, had a handful of tampons or something, right? Just like odd. But I was like, "Bro, what are you doing down here?" And so I just kind of said, "Huh, why are men buying women grooming or women hair care products?" And then when I went fast forward, now I was in Morocco, we realized, we went to a souk and just realized that they had a history of just really phenomenal oils. Like all the guys there had this really rich, luscious hair. And we learned that they are, the origin of argan oil was from there. And so that kind of started the spiral of looking into this as a possible solution of taking some of our heritage and making it a modern day twist. And that's where Fresh Heritage came about.
Beautiful. And then from there, you start this business and pretty much scale it to the moon, right? Like, I'm looking at some of the accolades here. You were able to grow that brand to $6,000 within 3 months of starting it. 60. There you go. 60,000 within 3 months of starting it. Recognized by Shopify as the top 1% of stores launched at the time. It's been recognized by Shark Tank, Founder Magazine. You're just absolutely crushing it. What were some of those key elements within Fresh Heritage at the time that gave it such a large amount of success in what seemed like such a short amount of time?
Yeah, part of the thing that we support founders with now is recognizing two things. Like, there's two gaps in skill sets for like success largely. It's just like the motivation gap and the abilities gap. And so motivation is like the things inside of you, your personal experience, limiting beliefs, unique advantages you have over your competitors. And then the abilities are kind of like the actual skill sets, like my ability to manage paid ads at the time and stuff like that. And so it was a combination of a bunch of experiences. So I had no knowledge about product, but I knew how to identify a target market, get my product in front of them, articulate its value. And I just came from, you know, raising money. And prior to that, I spent about $1 million, $1.5 million on ads at the time, running other people's products. So I was very comfortable with my ability to run paid ads. And so one of the things that we did with the mindset, the motivation and ability gap is from day one, we never thought we were selling product. What we thought we were doing and building was a community of growth-minded African-American men. And we monetized that relationship through our grooming products. And so from day one, we knew to just target community, build community in a way that would attract our right type of audience, and then serving them will figure out the growth. And so off the back, because of our ability to run paid ads, we were running paid ads even before we started. I don't think there's ever a week that went by that we had a Facebook account that we weren't running paid ads in the 4 years of the business. And so we just immediately scaled and we got up to 60K a month with our first 90 days because we had a really unique messaging for a very specific type of high performance black men. And we had a product that they could relate with to some of the issues that we were having ourselves.
I love that. And, you know, you talk a little bit about community, which is a great segue to just what I was able to see within Fresh Heritage. That was, it seems though, a big lever in really helping you guys to scale as fast as you did. I'm curious to know, because there are a lot of individuals that have paid community offers. It's one thing to get them in. It's another thing to keep them in, right? What were some of those different variables that you guys were looking at, or just things that you put in place to maximize the amount of value that people were getting once they got on the other side of being a part of that community?
It's a good question. And so when you think about community, there are really three ways to grow it. You could either build it, buy it, or borrow it, right? Build, buy, borrow. And so we had to think about community in those three ways, and there's pros and cons for each. So in the areas where we were borrowing community, which was an ideal one because it had a ton of leverage, we would figure out what other people already had our ideal customers and figure out ways that we can serve them that they weren't getting served in their existing community. And so we kind of got introduced to them by someone that they already had a long-standing relationship with, and gave them additional things that they needed to support additional growth. So we ideally targeted and partnered with people to borrow their community that already had longstanding relationships. So it's kind of like the precedent was set. They were in these communities for a long time. So the referral partner, the partnership, we knew that we were getting the quality of people that were thinking long-term versus transactional. So that was on the borrow. And the build and buy through paid and social and organic, we wanted to figure out what things we can do to add value to our guys to make it less about transactional, right? And so like, we think about this as introducing ourselves to a chick at the bar to try to get to know them, to marry, to court them, versus trying to take them home for the night. A lot of brands are transactional and they're trying to figure out the best pickup lines, the best little moves, the best outfits to wear to get them home for the night, not realizing that how you operate then could jeopardize your ability to get to know someone, build a long-term relationship with them. So off the top, we were not interested in one-night stands. We were interested in building long-term relationships with our customers. So part of the things that we did was, of course, the obvious stuff was there about like hair care and how to grow your beard. But we realized that the guys that we're interested in were also trying to start a family. They were also trying to become an entrepreneur. They were also trying to network with other like-minded men. And so we created meetups, both virtually and in person, to connect them in a foster environment. And so we try to be the facilitator of all the other things that were important into their life and just monetize our relationship with them through, oh, by the way, if you want to support us, here's how you support us. It's a product. It's great. But here's the bigger thing that we're building.
I love that. And, you know, it kind of goes back to one of my favorite quotes. I'm sure you know Alex Hormozi. He has a quote where he says, you know, it's hard getting new customers. So make sure when you get them, you keep them. And I think that having a monthly subscription offer somewhere within your business, I mean, we have one within our company. We're getting ready to launch another one very soon. It's a cheat code. Like, it literally is a cheat code, both on the customer side, but then also as a business owner side as well, because you're not having to scratch and claw and fiend and wonder where we're going to get our next dollar from. We're more focused on how can we add value to the 10 to 100 to 1,000 people that we already have in this thing that we're offering. So I think that that's great.
Yeah. One additional thing on that I wanted to touch on, because one of the things we push now is community as the pillar, the foundation of whatever business you're building. Okay. We talked about it earlier, but it's less about what product you're selling versus like which people you're trying to serve. And so our claim to fame around community building is like, all right, what proof do you have? Is that we had our top customer buy from us 46 times, and we generated 7 figures from repeat buyers. We had over 3,300 people join our membership program, right? To be on subscription. And so the things that we did there was so interesting because when you're thinking about growth, again, I like threes. There are three ways you could grow a business. Like, these are like old school kind of foundational principles from back in the day. It is acquire more or convert more customers, get them to spend more each time they buy, or get them to come back and buy more frequently, right? And so when we're thinking about growing, instead of just trying to find all the black men, because we're in a very limited audience, right? Our total addressable audience was America, men, just black men with beards. It's like 5 to 6% of the audience. So it's like, all right, it's not like we could grow this business by continuing to find more people. A better way is to, when we get them, figure out how we could get them to spend more with us each time, figure out how we could add value and additional products so that when they do buy from us, they spend more. So it goes from getting 10,000 customers a month, every single month, spending $25 to getting still maybe 10,000 customers, but you're getting them to spend $80,000 or $60,000 or $60 each time. So you could generate more money that way.
I love it. Oh my goodness. Now, this is my kind of talk. Whenever we talk about different ways to just scale and grow businesses, we're in my wheelhouse. I love it. Okay. So you're going through this process of building Fresh Heritage. Start the business in 2017. Now we get to 2021, ultimately, when you guys exit, right? What was that experience like going through, you know, essentially building this business? Because from what I understand, you already came into the business with the mission in mind of, no, we're going to sell this thing. And I think that for a lot of entrepreneurs, especially who are earlier on their journey, a lot of times we hear talk about generational wealth. And it's like, I'm going to build this thing to tens of millions and I'm going to keep it here and I'm never going to sell it and I'm going to pass it down. What was that thought process behind, all right, cool, we've done such tremendous work in this business, now I'm gonna go ahead and sell it off and go ahead and exit?
Yeah, when you think about wealth building, really, that notion of I'm going to build it and pass it on to my kids doesn't make a lot of sense. Because the richest people in the world, definitely in North America, have all gone through that model. I call it ABS. Acquire assets in a business, build up the value of the asset, sell it. And so like the Elon Musk, the Zuckerbergs, like whether they go public and sell through an IPO or they sell privately in private equity, that's it. And so I don't believe that just because I'm black, I have to try to figure out a different way to follow and create wealth. The blueprint's there, right?
It's right. Perfect.
So that was my exposure to private equity and mergers and acquisitions allowed me to realize that. And then the other thing is if you build a business where you really think your mission is to serve and add value, not just in it for a money grab, I was limited as much as I was able to start stuff. I had no experience scaling a business internationally, right? If you do that, it's like you're starting a whole business in each and every country that speaks a different language.
Right.
I had no knowledge on international shipping and logistics. I had limited capital. There are people who have unlimited capital and can really bring the brand to the place that it needs to be. So I saw my job as starting it, proving the concept, getting it to a point where it's profitable and has enough buy-in for a seasoned operator to then continue our dream and expand the brand globally to reach more people. And so I think all entrepreneurs, if you really think you're building something generationally, that's the way to do it. You cash out, you invest that money into other things, and you let someone else with the experience take your dream to the world.
I love it. I love it. Diving a little bit more into Fresh Heritage.
Yep.
Started the business in 2017. Sold it in 2021. And we hear the accolades about, you know, top 1% store in Shopify and all these other incredible things. I want to talk about 2019, the year that it seems like most people really don't know about or talk about, because from what I understand, within those 4 years, it was in 2019 that you guys actually almost lost the company.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, great question. The thing about entrepreneurship, man, it's so emotionally challenging. Everyone talks about the goods, like we started doing on this podcast. What I love about it is that we get to really talk about the downside. It's really a roller coaster. And so the higher the highs, you got to be prepared to balance out those highs with lows. And so some advice that someone gave me during 2019 is to compete long term, you really have to just understand how to keep in the middle. So when things are good, realize that they won't last forever and to prepare. When things are bad, also realize that they won't last forever and to prepare. Because what happened to me in the lesson here is we're doing really well. We got off to a great start and I assumed everything was always going to be like that. Mm-hmm. And I started making long-term investments with that in mind. What I mean by that, we're having record-breaking months. So I'm maxing out my credit cards or line of credit on inventory because of course it's going to keep growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I set myself up to, when I lost my ad account, I was stuck with a zeroed out our profit. We only had like 2 months worth of cash left. Mm-hmm. We're sitting on all this inventory all because of one thing. And so the opposite happens too, though. We sometimes see that people make bad decisions and they give up what they really want for what they could achieve now. So like when people are going through a low, the opposite happens where they make short-term great decisions that kill their long-term business.
Right.
So we just had to reset ourselves and create like, you know, a middle ground for our decisions. So we're still making long-term good decisions. So what happened there was I lost our ad account, only had 2 months of money left. And I realized I was building a Ponzi scheme. Like as much as we were generating money every month, it was feeding the beast. But if you know, for those of you not familiar with e-com, unlike services, if you want to grow and double in 3 months, you have to predict or gamble on that growth and buy the inventory now. So like all the profit we made, we pretty much rolled that right out to double in revenue, to double in inventory, sorry, so we could have the inventory needed to grow. But when we lost our ad account, we were screwed. And so it was a tough season. We almost didn't make it out. And it forced us to really like reshuffle our business. And that's when we started really focusing on LTV of the customer versus acquiring new ones. Because I'm like, all right, if I no longer had an ad account, how could I grow this business? It's from continuing to do business with the people who already know, like, and trust us. That's when we launched our membership program. That's how we started to really focus in on community and doing the boring business stuff that builds good businesses.
I love it. And I think that that's a great segue to your current company now that you have co-founded with your wife, Codner Co., right? Where basically you're coaching brands and businesses to do what you were able to do with Fresh Heritage, but without having to bump their head as many times as you guys probably did, right? So they're able to streamline their way to success. I'm curious to know, was there anything about almost losing Fresh Heritage in 2019 that helped you guys in shaping a lot of the core values and principles that Codner Co. has and how you're helping e-commerce businesses to scale the right way, right? Because you know, just as well as I do, there are seven-figure businesses that are like 1 month away from going under, right? There are businesses that are growing that just aren't healthy. So what was it about that 2019 year that you were able to take and now put into a lot of those core values and principles and these businesses that you're coaching?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier about motivation and ability gap, I think most people are going to answer this question around like ability, like learning these skills, understanding your cash flow, all that stuff, which we can get to. But I want to start by the mindset and the motivation stuff. Turning the business around was more mentally and emotionally challenging than actually acquiring the skills and the tools. Like, there are already people out there who know how to fix most of our problems, right?
Right.
I'm not the only one who have gone through this, right? So if you're currently struggling through, you're growing, no cash flow issues, you're always running out of money, like, I know how to fix that. Great. The bigger problem for us and the thing that we support our founders now is giving them the permission to go out and still believe in themselves. Because sometimes when you mess up and so much of your business depends on, you know, you're feeding your family from this, or your friends are looking at you, your family's looking at, why'd you leave your job to do this stupid idea? And now it's like, oh shoot, it's not working. You feel like you can't get over it. And if you think you can't, and if you think you can,
probably right.
Both of them are right. So you have to decide and really believe that you can get through it and that you have the God-given ability and God's favor in you to get through it. So that was the biggest part for me. And once I did that and got through that and realized that this is really what God wants me to do, and I have the ability to do that, I realized I needed to focus more so on cash flow and profit. So everyone talks about revenue.
Okay.
Some people talk about profit. I haven't seen many people talk about actual cash flow. So what that means is you can actually be growing revenue, generating a profit on paper, but not have any cash in the bank to support it.
What's the difference between your three?
All right. So revenue is, in e-com, I make $1 million, right? That's revenue. Profit is, let's say if you bought my beard oil for 250K and had some other expenses, at the end of the year on the $1 million, I made 200K in profit, right?
Okay.
Cash flow is, you may not have 200K in the bank because you've already committed to buying new inventory. Or so your money's already tied up in fronting more inventory for profit next year, or other investments, or maybe some of your cash is being deployed to pay down debt, or you have high interest. And so even though you have like profit per se after buying and selling inventory, you don't have the cash in the bank that supports your P&Ls. So a lot of people in e-com, because it's capital intensive, this happens also like contracting or construction or even real estate, where like you have to front the capital. In theory, if you buy a house for 100, you could sell it for 200, or if you have a project or whatever, or an e-com brand. But what happens is, because you don't actually generate that revenue at the same time, sometimes you're making that money on the back end. So it's like you're making the investment and then you're generating the profit in the future. So there could be months in between where you don't have the cash to support the profit you have on paper. So like when you order that inventory, you don't have the cash flow to match your profit. But when you get the product in and then you actually sell through it, then the cash flow shows up. Right. So it's understanding that there's times you're growing your business, or actually growing it too fast could actually kill you. Because if you're only looking at profit, that's why sometimes with e-com, especially, you're growing and you're making sales, but you don't know if you're broke or poor. Broke or rich, because you don't have the bank account to match what your accountant may say that you should be making. And
okay.
the problem is most businesses under 25 mil a year only have to do their taxes and their P&Ls in cash basis, but that doesn't really show you cash flow. You have to do this thing called accrual-based accounting that really shows you the difference between your assets and like money in transit. So not to nerd out on numbers, but for the e-com people working here, what happens is like if you do it, if you do $10,000 in a month and you don't buy inventory, it sounds like you're profitable. But when you eventually run out of inventory, then all of a sudden you do $10,000 a month, but then you buy $15,000 in inventory for that month, it'll show like you're negative $5,000. And so there's like these big swings. So you don't really have a real accurate picture of what your true profit is or what your true cash flow is. So you have to shift to a different way of looking at your P&Ls to see all three at the same time. And so we weren't doing that. And many people don't.
Are there any, and that's good. That's very, very good. So then are there any other potential constraints or bottlenecks that keep a lot of e-commerce business owners from growing and scaling the way to where they can get to that point of exiting the way that you guys were able to, outside of, you know, what you just broke down?
Yeah. So cash flow is a major thing. The other piece is, and then remind me to talk about Leverage Workshop Consultant as an option for every founder.
Oh, we're going to get into it. Let's do it.
Okay. Bet. So that's one. The other thing is transferability. And so when you're building an asset, the difference between having like a lifestyle small business and something that people want is if you have to show up and dance on the internet in order for it to make money, you don't have a job, you don't have a business, you just have a high paying job. And so like that was part of the problem too. Like I was in all the ads, I was over everything, right? I was in the advertising, telling the story, showing up at conventions. So if a random big business bought me and I didn't want to be tied to a contract with them, the value of my business would drop. So the second thing we have to work about is transferring the job that you have into an actual business. So having systems, having SOP, having smarter people involved with the company to be able to do things. And so that was a big one for us. We're a Black business selling to Black people. The majority of the people who are acquiring businesses don't look like us. So part of our biggest thing was, all right, what would make a white business, a white-owned business, uncomfortable buying us? It's they don't understand the customers, they don't understand the product. So what we intentionally did was we found a white ad agency, a guy named Josh in Middle Tennessee, to learn how to market to our Black consumers in a way what we did. And we were able to show like, hey, it doesn't matter if you're Black, white, or man, woman, like the process is the process. We've now documented a systematic way where if you do these things, it gets these results. And so we just started dissecting the things that removed me from the business so that anyone could run the business that we built.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay, we get now we're peeling the layers back. So now we have context on just some of the different things that we can do to grow our e-commerce businesses, but also some of the biggest things that keep people from doing so in the same, right? I want to start to dive now into your other field of expertise, which is, of course, the buying and selling of these businesses. You mentioned something earlier. I want to unpack it acronym, letter by letter within the acronym, the ABS method, right? What exactly, how exactly does ABS work in this process of us buying and selling businesses?
Yeah, the good thing about buying or selling, it's the same process, but just in reverse. And so the reason I was able to do so well building my business to sell is because I spent time with my mentor figuring out how to buy and acquire assets. And so the ABS, acquire assets in a business, or acquire equity in a business, build up the value of it, and sell it. So let's break down the three. Acquire equity in a business. The beautiful thing about today is it's really easy to get equity in a business. You could start from scratch, which we're great at doing, through understanding like you got into the credit business, right?
Right.
You got into e-commerce. There's a lot of e-learning courses in different ways, seminars and things to learn about things to start from scratch. Another way to do that is just to acquire an existing thing. So that's kind of the time I spent before an M&A. And if I were doing it now, now that I've gone through it, I would just acquire an existing thing because they have already have proof of concept. They already have customers. And most times people aren't fully utilizing the community and the assets they built. So you could acquire equity in a business by starting it or just buying an existing business. The build up of value of it is interesting because not all revenue is created equally. And so there's a lot of things that people do without the experience to just generate revenue and sales. Like I gave that analogy about trying to pick up a chick at the bar to just take her home versus building long term. Same thing with revenue. There's certain things you could do, like run flash sales or do one-off products to generate buzz and revenue, but builds no enterprise value for a potential buyer. For example, revenue that you generate on subscription is way more valuable than one-off sales just because there's more predictability. Mm-hmm. Someone could look at your business and be like, okay, of the million you made, 700K is from reoccurring revenue. The average customer stays on there for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I know if I give you this $1 million, 700,000 of it is pretty set for the next 6 months. I could live with that. If you just have a bunch of one-off sales, new customers, mm-hmm. your business is worth half because if someone buys that, they're not sure what's going to happen on day one. So we were intentional about building revenue that not only grew revenue, but grew enterprise value, which is two different things.
What? I'm about to throw this mic. Let me sit up. All right. It's getting good. All righty. So Abs, you kind of just started to unpack just some of the different ways that we can build value in a business. What are some of, because I'm trying to look at it from both sides. If I'm looking to sell and then I'm also looking to buy, right? What are, if I'm starting from ground zero, what are some of the, I guess, for lack of a better term, sexiest business models that most people are looking to buy businesses favor or lean more towards versus the others?
Good point. And so I think businesses that could be done from anywhere, so internet businesses, digital businesses, e-com, have a mass appeal because like buying and selling is the same breath. So when you're building your business too, if you're building like a big facility in a certain location, then your buyers, you're limited with only buyers who are comfortable or already knowledgeable about moving into that location versus if you have a business that anyone could operate anywhere, which our buyers were based in Europe, right? And so if they had to operate it here in Florida, probably wouldn't have been interesting to them. So that's one. The other thing is business that has, when people are buying businesses, it's easier to answer this way. When people are buying in businesses, there are things that they look for and don't look for. And so you should build a business to be attractive to that. So for example, they look at risk and assess risk in many different ways. So it's like operational risk, right? Is all of their revenue coming from one product? What happens if we could no longer sell that product? The factory burns up or whatever. Then we're out of business, right?
Right.
So having plan Bs is crucial. How easily can someone come in and duplicate or copy what you have? Do you have a moat around your business? Do you have IP? Do you have trademarks? Is your thing actually unique? Mm-hmm. That the transferability, are we buying this thing that we could run without this guy or this founder? Or is if the founder leaves, does the business leave, right? Or the audience only buying the product because they love the founder personally, or do they love the brand? What are other things? Do you have reoccurring revenue versus one-off?
Mm-hmm.
And also any kind of concentration, like I mentioned product, is all the money coming from one product? Is all the sales coming from the owner? Is all the sales coming from one sales channel? Is it only dependent on Facebook ads? What happens if you lose your ad account?
Right.
So once you start diversifying yourself of like just risk and just being all in on one thing, you start to build not only value, but revenue repeatability too.
50% of businesses fail within the first 5 years, and 38% of those businesses fail due to lack of access to capital. But 100% of business owners who are watching this aren't gonna have that issue because I'm about to teach y'all how to bankroll your business. What's going on, family? My name is Marvin Francois, and back in 2020, I was a new entrepreneur with little to no idea on how I was gonna build my first successful business. But fast forward a couple of years later, I've been able to build multiple successful six-figure businesses by leveraging business credit. And today, I want to give entrepreneurs the game on how they can do the same. So this Thursday, I'm going to be hosting my free Bankroll Your Business Masterclass, where I'm going to teach you how to go from having bad personal credit and little to no business funding to having perfect personal credit and access to a minimum of $50,000 in funding for your business. Spots are going fast and the clock is ticking. So if you haven't already, click the link above or below this video to secure your seat. And I'll see y'all on Thursday. Peace.
Kind of a little bit left field here, but this is a personal question I had. I'm not sure if this is within the space of e-commerce, but we'll see. I'm looking around like in the landscape of a lot of different, I guess you would call them businesses that are partnering with creators. So like, for example, we see Rihanna with Fenty, we see Logan Paul with Prime, Mr. Beast with Feastables, The Rock and Terramana. I can go on and on and on and on. And it seems like this market is growing larger and larger, right? So when we talk about the future of buying and selling businesses, right? These businesses that are partnering with the creators know that they were able to leverage the brand that they've built to get in front of a certain target audience. Is it safe to say that the future of what the space of buying and selling and businesses, I don't know if I would say it would be hinged on these partnerships with creators, but if I'm someone that's looking to invest in businesses or looking to create a business that I want to sell, that is something I'm going to have to take into strong consideration moving forward.
Yeah, good clarifying question too, because we're just talking about how that could be a bad thing. So those deals are structured a little bit differently. And so to answer your question, I think that makes a lot of sense because there are operators who need audience, right? And there are people who have big audience that don't know how to operate. And so I think that's a perfect marriage because we talked about earlier in the podcast about the importance of building community. Right. Beyond The Rock, all these people already have a big community of people who know, like, and trust them. The missing thing is how they could monetize that relationship. So we built community, then we monetize through Beard Oil. They already have community. Half of the problem already solved.
Right.
And so you just have to figure out ways to monetize it. And so the thing with them is a lot of the times, and even I could talk a little bit about this with our deal, what they do is they have a separate kind of name, image, and likeness agreement where even though they're a part of it, like they have a whole operations team who is managing their persona around it, telling them, hey, we've got these PR shoots lined up. We've got these photo shoots. Here's what we need you to say. Mm-hmm. And then the team is running with it. And so it's kind of like those half of a watermelon is better than 100% of a grape situations where it makes sense for both cases. And so you could do a thing where you sell your business and you have a name, image, and likeness agreement separate where the brand recognizes that your name, image, and likeness helps add value to the brand. And so you can have a separate situation where that's you can set up that in addition to the buying and selling of your business. So like Rihanna owns 50% of Fenty. And all the other people you mentioned own a percentage of the brand. They don't own 100% of it, just so that there's both sides, both interest in both sides, so both sides can win.
Talking more so about the S in the ABS method, which is essentially where the money is made, the selling. Yeah. One of the things I've heard you talk about on a couple of different sit-downs you've done, you've talked about the difference in the selling process when you're dealing with private equity versus when you're dealing with venture capital. What exactly is the difference between the two, pros and cons that come with going in either direction?
Good question. So when brands raise money from VC, you are essentially selling your business there. You're just selling some of it. So selling could mean selling all or some of it. So like in that example with Rihanna, with Fenty, she technically already sold some of her business, right? Because she owns 50, so she sold another 50 to LVMH Group. So those kind of exits happen all the time, especially in our community. When we raise money, we give up 10, 20, 30, 40% of our business. When you take on that VC money, though, you have to understand that how they are structured is they have to return all of their capital with each deal. That's like how they think. So if they have a $100 million fund, whatever amount of money they gave you, their expectation is that you're going to blow up and they're going to make all of that $100 million back just from each of the deals they invest in. That's in theory what most people do. In reality, their expectation is they probably have to triple the fund. So if they raise $100 million, the exits that they have to equal $300 million in most cases to be a decent private equity or VC fund. So the difference is VC and private equity borrow money, they invest in companies, and they have to give back their investors the money within a certain time frame. So when you take on money from VCs, typically within 5 years, they're expecting like some liquidity event.
Right.
So if you're not aware of that beforehand, you should be aware of that because they have privileges that could like literally force you to like be removed from the company as founder or to sell your business within a certain amount of time.
Wow.
And then VC is a little less aggressive, private equity is a little less aggressive. VCs they expect outsized returns. They're betting on unicorns. Mm-hmm. Or private equity are more, you know, they're not really going for $1 billion exits. They're going for maybe 8, 9 figure exits. So the aggressive growth is a little bit less tapered, and their valuations are more so centered around profit. So they encourage profitable growth, where VCs traditionally encourage growth at all costs. So you have to understand like what you're getting into before you do either route. And so when you sell, there's a lot of different expectations. And so it's like harder to find a billion-dollar company in the VC route, where I feel like there's a bunch of us who have 7, 8, and even 9-figure ideas. So my personal comfort zone is to hit, you know, singles and doubles by growing and selling to private equity for $5 to $15 million exits. Which is a lot easier and more predictable to do. Like if you had 1,000 black-owned businesses, I would say the majority of us could probably figure out a way to get $1 million to $15 million exit. Versus if you had 1,000 black-owned businesses, the likelihood of one of us having a $1 billion company is very rare. So I'm in this game of just like trying to get as many people financially free with a 7 or 8-figure exit versus trying to bet all on a $1 billion exit.
From your experience, how do you, if I hear that and I say, okay, private equity sounds a little bit more feasible for me, especially if I'm building this, you know, 7-figure brand or business, how do I go about finding private equity firms and companies that I can actually say, hey, I spent the last 3-4 years building this beard care company or this hair care, this or this, whatever it may be, would you guys be interested in buying?
Yeah. So that comes really around strategic value. And so when you are building it, I like having a North Star, like something you're building your business towards and like making sure all your decisions line up towards that. And so for us, I'll give you an example. For us, what we were doing is at the time, direct to consumer for men wasn't really a big thing. Mm-hmm. The Procter and Gamble's of the like all thought that men liked going in store to shop and we had to sell their products for about $11 or less. So our products were premium price and focused on direct to consumer. We had no retail. So we knew and created an ideal buyer profile. It's almost like a...
You're good.
Okay. It's almost like a Facebook targeting, where it's not like you're specifically talking to one person, but you have like an idea of one person. So it's like we knew our buyer would be heavily into retail, already in the men's grooming space, but the brands that they had much lower margins and they didn't control the relationship with the customer. Mm-hmm. And so we were building something that profile of person would see the value of it, right? Mm. And so when we went to sell, we went through a broker because they have a network of potential buyers, but we created a buyer persona. We're like, hey, broker, I know you've got 10,000 people in your network, but we know the people who are going to find this the most valuable look like this. And we're fortunate, like the people who bought us like fit that profile. You ever heard that analogy of like the grandfather gifting the grandson like an old beat up car and he went to go sell it and they're like, man, it's a piece of crap. I'll give you like $1,000. And he was like, no, go to this other car dealership. And they're like, oh, this is a little beater, maybe $2,500. And he was like, all right, go to that antique shop. They're like, oh my gosh, where'd you find this? I'll give you $100,000. It's kind of like that. It's like strategically building your business so that when you put these things that you've built in front of this person who's been looking for it, they'll see the value in it.
I love that. Now, one of the things you mentioned earlier, I wanted to make sure we came back to a full circle. You said something about leveraging workshop consulting for business owners. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, it's something I've been doing since building the business. And I recently started sharing that with other professionals as a way to grow income. And so if you're building a business that is requires a lot of capital, like e-com, if you want to grow, you got to like gamble and buy inventory now. And as you grow, you're always reinvesting the profits in inventory. Or if you trade your time for money, like if you are an esthetician or a doctor or someone who, if you're not there, you don't make money. Mm-hmm. One of the things you could do is monetize your experience through this model. And so as I was building the business, when you're thinking about as you're in a capital raising, as you're thinking about ways to get access to capital for your business, most people want to get capital that they can do everything with. But it's like, can you really raise money from a VC fund and be like, hey man, I want to give myself $100,000 raise? They probably would be like, that's probably not a good use of our capital. So what I did, because I knew that we're building it to sell, but I also needed to survive and live comfortably, provide for my family, mm-hmm. is I decided to reinvest the profits of our business in the growing instead of paying myself. And I used this leverage workshop consultant model as a way to fundraise my salary. And I've been able to generate six figures in income profit from this since year one from Fresh Heritage, doing this so that I didn't have to choose between building the value of this thing or providing for my family. It was a way that I could do both while working less than 20 hours a week. Cause like I thought about a lot of other options. I did courses, I did agency, and that sucked because agency like really took way more time than I needed to. And ultimately, like it wasn't great money for the amount of effort. Like I helped make someone $100,000 and I got so mad because I only got $2,500 that month. And I realized that I was neglecting my own brand who mm-hmm. had this big potential, right? I tried courses, but what happens with courses is you do all this work to create a course and you launch it only to realize the things that people actually need are the things you took for granted. But because you do it every day, you didn't even think that you needed to include this stuff. And so your course doesn't really get good until version 3 or 4. And it takes so long to get it out, editing videos, promoting it. So these workshop models were so cool because I literally could just show up in one day, talk about what I'm already doing in my business, and just give value to people on a thing. So like how it works is, for me, it was ads. I was scaling my business, talking about ads. And a lot of people were trying to figure out ads for their business. And so pay $100, whatever the price is, spend 3 hours with me. I talk about what I'm already doing in my business, give you my SOPs, my blueprints, and then they're off. And there are some people who are going to want to work with you more that you can charge an additional fee on the back end. And so that's what I did. And so that was the thing I did one day out the month to generate 10, 20K a month to take care of my salary in a day while working, you know, 5, 6, 10 hours at most in the month on this thing. So that's a model I'm going to start rolling out to share with other thought leaders and experts who are looking for additional ways to add profit to their lifestyle.
It sounds very similar to like webinars. So I'm kind of curious to know, you say you do it once a month. Why not once a week? Because I know most people who do take a similar approach with like webinars, they do it weekly, are able to make ridiculous amounts of money in doing so. Is there any reason behind that?
You could. So like the people who do webinars, typically they're like, that's their main thing. Mm-hmm. And this, like, that's their business. They're in info. What this is more centered around are for people who are already living and building a big business or a business of like significance, like e-com or a service business or a doctor's office, and they don't have the capacity to start another full-time thing, but they want to monetize their relationship in the most leverageable way. That's why that leverage workshop consultant is there. And so while you probably could speed it up to weekly, I recommend starting it quarterly and then doing it at least on a monthly cadence. And if possible, you could actually do it weekly.
Gotcha. Do you mind if I switch gears to a little bit more on the personal side?
Shoot.
Okay. I want to take some time because you've provided a tremendous amount of value around just e-com, scale, abs method, and beyond. I want to talk about someone, because I've watched a fair amount of your interviews and just the content you put out, who I don't really hear get mentioned all that much whenever people are sitting down with you, obviously because they're trying to get all the information that you've had and amassed over these years. I want to talk about Mrs. Natarsia Codner. Excuse me, I'm pronouncing her name right.
Natarsia Codner, the boss.
Natarsia Codner, the boss. So when we talk about Fresh Heritage, going back to that year in 2019 where you guys almost lost the business, through me kind of just doing some digging, I found out a big reason why you guys were able to turn Fresh Heritage around, from what I understand, was because that was when your wife actually left her job, six-figure job, to come be a COO in the company. I'm curious to know what that conversation is like. You know, you're sitting down at the dinner table. It's like, hey, babe, listen, I know you're crushing it at your job right now, making all this money. I'm sinking over here. I just wanted to know if you could leave what you're doing, come over and help us figure this thing out. What was that conversation like in that overall experience?
Man, you know what the Bible says about he who finds a good wife, right? And so that is so true. Like, I actually want to shout her out even before then. So I alluded to the fact that when I started getting into business, my worst business mistake was left me $250,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. This is when we first started dating. And after this experience, I knew we were going to get married. because I was so depressed and sad. And I spent like a week just hanging with her. And she was like, all right, look, dude, you got like another week to be sad. But after that, bro, you got to figure this S-H-I-T out.
Right.
You got to figure this stuff out. And I was like, man, I've never been in debt so much. It's like drowning every time I wake up. And she was like, dude, you just raised $15 million in like 2 months. Certainly you can figure out how to figure out a quarter mil. I was like, yo, that's so true. Like when you put it like that. And so I ended up getting out of it. And so fast forward to now, she's a big believer in what we're doing, big believer in me, my biggest cheerleader. And she compliments me in a way where I'm really good at vision and like telling the story and getting buy-in, but I suck at execution. She's like, a traditional integrator. But more importantly, she's really good at like tapping into people's minds and getting the best out of them. She's amazing at that. And so at that time, I had a good idea, but we were stuck. And so a little bit before that, right around the time when the business was failing, she was really the only thing keeping the lights on, to be honest. And it was a prayer and fast about the decision kind of moment where I was like, all right, I know you're keeping the lights on. I'm going to need you to leave that secure thing to come jump in this sinking ship because I know you're what the business needs. And so she's down, man. And so we prayed about it. We thought about it. She left, and literally night and day, the business turned around because I was able to focus on the things I knew how to do, marketing, scale, and finances. And she was able to figure out people, operations, put systems together. She's a big part of the transferability piece that I talked about because one, I had to make sure that she could come in and run the business without me. And then she did such a good job at that she put systems in place that anybody could come in the business and run without me. And then she helped build up a team. She was over all the people, things that I'm not good at. And so she really helped in a bunch of different ways, not only get the business ready to sell, but put me in a better place to operate in my zone of genius and really get me comfortable growing into a leader. Whereas, I'm now comfortable hiring smarter people than me, partner with people who are better than me at certain things, and fully trusted in them to help grow the vision to the next level.
Listen, if you're an entrepreneur struggling to get funding because of your bad credit, then this video is for you. You see, I understand that when banks deny businesses for funding, they're not just denying businesses the capital they need, but they're also denying business owners the resources that they need to build the business of their dreams. And as a business owner, I've seen this happen over and over and over and over again, but I want you to know that there's a solution. Because here at Takeoff Financial, we've helped countless entrepreneurs just like you go from having poor personal credit and not being able to access funding to having perfect personal credit that they were able to leverage to access 5 to 6 figures in funding, and we want you to be the next one. So click the link above or below this video to secure your free consultation, and we'll see you on the other side of success, family.
Oh my goodness, man, I love that. So now, I think a reason it was so important for me to bring that up just because in me being in the space, I know that a lot of people have their qualms about partnership, right, in business. But partnership in business is one thing. Becoming a partner with your significant other is an entirely different thing because it's so hard to be able to take the husband hat off and put the entrepreneur hat on and vice versa. What does that balance on a day-to-day look like, right? Because I'm sure you guys, like with any partnership, there are times where you probably butt heads on the business side. You probably butt heads on the husband and wife side. What is that middle ground that you've been able to find to where you're still navigating this journey successfully and growing this 7 going on 8 figure brand that you're building?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of the people who we support now are attracted to that. And so we work with a lot, I would say like 60% of our customers are women-owned businesses or like family-owned businesses. And they like that dynamic because they're trying to figure that out and they see that we've done it and has figured something out and they want the perspective of it. Our best review ever by far is we had our in-person meetup and the wife was a part of the business that we were coaching and we helped turn her business around. And the husband flew in kind of unannounced and we're like, hey, what are you doing here? And he was like, look, man, I just had to come here in person and say, thank you. This program, you saved our marriage. We were bumping heads so much. We had so much stress about this business and we couldn't figure it out. And you guys really helped us see a light at the end of the tunnel. And it's almost like it was therapy for business.
Wow.
And so that's actually what my wife does. And she does performance coaching for the founders to help with like all the mental stuff, all the unblocks, dealing with this personally, the financial stress on the family's vision and how this all rolls in. And so what we have told them is it's easier to try to silo it with like business and personal. But the reality is if you're having arguments in personal, it's going to transfer over into business when you show up. And the other thing is like, I was like a workaholic and she just came from corporate where like at 5 o'clock you clock out. So we found it easier to just have blackout times instead of her trying to say like, why are you working at 6 o'clock on a Friday or a Saturday? We just established blackout dates where you could do whatever you want, except for these times. These times are dedicated to the family. And so managing a schedule that way it was easier to set clear expectations about what we should be doing, what we shouldn't. And then the other thing is we have leaders with certain things. And so like in all things kind of marketing and sales, kind of, I would say I have more voice because I have more experience, but all things operationally and like founder, like mindset and stuff, like we have our own rules where we are kind of the leaders of these subjects. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of bow down to her in those areas. And like, I take the lead in certain areas. So having set boundaries about who's in charge of what, roles and when we can't and can work really helped us create some sort of balance with managing the family business.
Man, that is, you're speaking to the core. I mean, I'm not a married man, but my business partner is, and like literally verbatim, a lot of what you're talking about are very similar to a lot of conversations we have of how he has been able to find that balance between him and his wife. And, you know, to see what you've been able to do with her, not just understanding what you're doing in business, but being in that business with you and actively working towards the same mission that you're trying to build with Codner Crow. I think that's incredible. And, you know, I know we have to start closing, but I also want to take time to talk about another young lady that is in your life that I think also is shaping a lot of the different things you're doing in your entrepreneurial journey. Miss Nori Codner.
Yeah. Little boss.
The little boss. So we got big boss. And then of course we have the little one as well.
Or liquor boss, as we said in Jamaica.
There you go. So if I understand correctly, she came into the world 2020.
Yep.
From 2020 up until now, you know, we're essentially getting ready to make 4 years of age this year. Once again, we talked a lot about how people in the space, we love to talk about generational wealth and all these other different things. How has her and you becoming a father and now her coming into your life also shaped and changed just your mission and a lot of the different values that you've been building on in building this new company?
Yeah, that's really good. I would say that Little Boss coming into our life is interesting because you like a lot of people say things, but you really could find out what they value by how they spend their time and their money, more so probably even their time.
Right.
So a lot of these cats are like, yo, doing it for my kids, never see their kids. Right. Never around, never present. When they're around, they're still not present. They're on their phone.
Right.
So like it really challenged me to challenge my integrity to be like, yo, am I really the man that I say I am? Not only to people, who cares about that, but to myself. Mm-hmm. I've said I've been doing this all along for my kid. Now I have one. How am I going to show for her? What's she going to think of me? And so it's been pretty interesting. Like, so right around the time we still had the business when she was born. But when she was born, I realized it was definitely time to sell so I could be more present. And it was the best thing because we sold before she could walk. And so I was actually there, like supporting her and taking her first steps. I was actually able to see her take her first steps. And it was just like all these things that money can't buy to just be able to be there. And so like how we spend our money, like we sold, I could have bought like a Porsche or something crazy. We like got a full-time nanny so like she could get the best education. She's in like private school. And so like here where we are in South Florida, like getting a real good education. She like understands Spanish. So like we're pouring into all these things instead of being material or doing other selfish things. And so she's really just changed like my meaning of like what it actually means to be successful. Because it matters like what she thinks about me. Right. And so like the other day she said she wants to be like me when she grows up and she wants to be an entrepreneur. And it's just like, when I was in Joshua Tree, she called me on FaceTime and she was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like talking to her and she was like, I'm working on my computer. So she's just like mimicking all these things that she's seeing, right? And so It's really cool, man. Like, of all the people that we impact and all the people that we're trying to be meaningful to, we got to first start by being impactful and meaningful to our own kids and our own family. And not just by our words, but through our actions and how we spend our money and our time.
I love that. I love that. And I think that's a great way for us to, you know, start to close out. I would say this, as we do begin to close, if you could just share some parting words for, you mentioned, of course, what you had went through in your journey of entrepreneurship of being basically $250,000 in debt and where you were then into, you know, where you are now, having the success you had, coaching other people to do the same. For other people that are still new and fresh in this e-com journey and are trying to a certain degree, mimic the success that you've been able to have up until this point, just some closing words for them and then also letting the people know where they can find you.
For sure. Kind of e-com and all entrepreneurs, a friend of mine that I grew up with a few years ago, he actually died. He collapsed, couldn't figure it out. He was dead for about 10 minutes. And doctors gave up on him. His grandmother happened to be there, just kept praying over him, asking the doctors to keep going. And he miraculously came back, was in a coma. They just for sure thought he was going to be a vegetable. He was just at my house for Easter, just like chilling. Wow. It's like nothing wrong. And so like in that moment, I learned a bunch of valuable lessons. And so one of the first ones for entrepreneurs is sometimes what's happening in our life and the things that we're building are not only for us, but it's for other people around us who may be your clients or may just be people who are looking from a distance. And so we really have to think intentionally about why we're doing what we're doing and recognizing that we're not only doing it for, like I mentioned, Nori, my kid, or your wife, but there are other people who are going to be impacted on your journey. So if you're thinking about starting, start. You don't know how many people you're going to impact along your way. I believe everyone was called to this world with an opportunity to be great in our different lanes. And you are not only doing yourself a disservice, but other people who are waiting on you to launch and do something meaningful for the world so that they can be positively impacted. So that would be the first thing. If you're starting off, just start. And if you have something, do it bigger, because it's not even about the money at this point, but it's like the bigger the business, the bigger the impact could be. So that was one thing. And then get help. A lot of the things that I'm helping people with are all things that I've figured out. I don't have to be the one to help you, but there's so many people who have fixed, gone through the things that you're currently struggling with and it's currently keeping you handicapped. My biggest superpower has been that I've always believed in investing in myself and getting help from other people who are steps ahead of us. So it's like I cheat time. It's like I'm able to do things in 6 months, which should have taken me 2 or 3 years, just because I've gotten the advice and help from someone. So that'd be my other parting words. And, you know, I'm a believer. And so the other thing is to find faith, find something that you believe that's bigger than you to guide you, because this journey is going to be so difficult and so tough. And I don't know how people get through it without recognizing that there's a bigger power, the creator's above,
right,
directing all our moves. And so the minute I'm still working on it, but the minute I started shifting from trying to be the owner of my life, like having to figure everything out, to being the general manager of my life, but recognizing that there's someone above me that already has the plan that I just need to follow, but I still need to show up and be diligent with my life every day. And I still need to show up and work. But that little shift had just created so much clarity and so much ease for me to be able to sleep well at night and to figure things out whenever I've been in trouble. So it wasn't short and sweet, but those are the things that are on my heart to share with someone who's thinking about getting started in business today.
Man, I appreciate it. And that even spoke to me as well. I definitely do resonate with a lot of what you just said. For those who want to be able to follow you further and beyond, where can the people find you?
Yeah, codner.co is our website, and Instagram, Gamal Codner, YouTube, Codner & Co. Is where I'm typically at. So Codner & Co. website and YouTube, I just committed to putting more episodes out on there. And then Instagram and LinkedIn is Gamal Codner. And we support founders in a couple of things. One, building a business that you can sell. Whether you do sell or not is up to you, but at least having the ability to walk away or work less in your business, that's what we're trying to help. And then we are recently also starting to support people who are experts to build up additional income by launching their own leverage workshop consultant model to build an additional six figures a year in profit to fund their lifestyle. And so if any of those things are interested to you and you want to learn more, hit me up there. Let me know that you came from Marvin and I will take great care of you.
I love it. My brother, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you for everybody who has watched up until this point. If you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second, take a minute, take an hour out of your day to make sure that you tap in with Gamal, but also like and share this podcast with someone else who needs it. As always, I'm your host, Marvin Francois, Gamal Codner. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. And as always, thank you and God bless. Peace.
Peace.